I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about all the doings at the Indianapolis Public Library. We will talk about changes to the summer reading program, about the library's new strategic plan, about the digitization efforts that are part of that plan, and about the many ways the library is adapting to meet the changing ways in which people read and share information. Joining me for this discussion will be the library's Chief Executive Officer, Jackie Nitas. Please join the conversation by calling 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about all the doings at the Indianapolis Public Library today. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, with me in the studio to discuss all of these doings is a No Limits veteran, Jackie Nitas, who's the CEO of the library. I think, what is this, like your fourth or fifth time, I think, on the show?
I think it's my fourth time, and fourth I enjoy time. It. Thank you so much.
Well, it is really good to have you back here. Particularly at a busy time for the library. I mean, you got a lot going on right now.
We do. Now, when you just gave that litany of all the different ways that No Limits can be found, I was sitting here thinking, wow, you're all over the place too, which is pretty exciting. But we are. This is a wonderfully busy time for the library. Summer is in many ways our most exciting time of the year.
Why is that?
It's the time when many people have time for choices, and many of them choose the library as part of how they're going to spend their time. It's a time when we really focus in on how we can complete that circle of the year for our children and keep them engaged. And so we launch our most intense programming during the summer.
And what are some of the programs that you
Well, the summer reading program itself is a summer-long activity at all of our locations, both our physical buildings and many of the other neighborhood places that we stop at. This is our 95th summer for the summer reading program, which is pretty amazing to think of. And last year we had over 57,000 participants, registered participants. So I'm thinking this year will be pretty
amazing.
That's a
good-sized city for Indiana.
Yeah,
all by itself.
It is.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. And we think everybody's so busy and all of that. But obviously, people do look forward to participating in this program.
Now, you're making some changes to it, though.
We
year,
are.
Right?
We're recognizing, I guess, maybe some of the changes in our population as well, and also recognizing the way the library can help people connect with other things that are important to them. This year, the theme for the summer reading program is Read in Any Language. And we can talk a little bit more about why that theme, but a couple of very exciting new elements to this year's program include something from one of our wonderful sponsors. The College Choice Program is actually providing two scholarships for $529 each that children can register for, and these would be scholarships that would go into a College Choice Savings Program. And it's a comment on the fact that we're recognizing and our sponsors are recognizing that children need to be planning ahead, families need to be planning ahead for their education. And the summer reading program is part not only of the fun of the summer, but also part of that long-term work you're doing to be ready for college. Mm-hmm. And really bringing it home by
whole,
actually having
whole
a
lifelong learning
scholarship opportunities as part of the program.
Yeah. Now, one of the changes, I know we were talking off the air, is that you've expanded it beyond children.
We have. You know, we've had adults who have participated by reading with their family. But if you think of the demographics of our city nowadays, there's an awful lot of adults who don't have children at home. They mm-hmm. And they're looking for a little bit of guidance, if you will, about what to read. And so looking at the kind of international flavor to this year's summer reading program, we came up with a summer reading program for adults that has 12 recommended books and a series of associated events. And each of the books are written by foreign authors, and these are very well-recognized authors in their countries or among their ethnic groups. So I think it's really going to open up the eyes and the kind of reading appetites of some of our Indianapolis residents.
Who are the authors, if I might ask?
There's 12 of them, and some of them won't be recognizable to all of us because we don't read all of this international stuff all the time. One or two of them will be recognizable. Some of them I'll have all I can do to pronounce them properly, John, to tell you the truth.
Well, if we make mistakes on that, we've got a very literate audience here.
They'll call and correct us. Well,
so
certainly Khalid Hosseini, many people would know. He's the author of The Kite Runner and A Thousand Splendid Suns. We're going to be featuring his book, In the Mountains Echoed. We're excited about him. He will actually be visiting our city next year, and that's another story. But there is a Nigerian author named Chimamanda Adichie. That's a little hard one for me. We have an author, Rodolfo Anaya, and he's a Chicano author who is actually fairly well known in among students of Chicano literacy. Julie Atsuku. And she's the author of When the Emperor Was Divine, but we're suggesting that you start by reading The Buddha in the Attic.
Okay.
So you can get the flavor of these books. These are not your typical whodunit. You know, they're much richer, I think, much more literary and perhaps engaging for people. Edwige Danticat is the author of Claire of the Sea Light. And it's kind of interesting to me. We have a lot of partners on some of these. The Butler Writers Center, where there's going to be a pop-up discussion at Calvin Fletcher's Coffee Company for a book called A Constellation of Vital Phenomena by Anthony Mara. So we're really taking this all over the community and kind of looking for the linkages. And I think this is going to be really exciting for adults who are looking for that. You said lifelong learning a few minutes ago, and I think that's very much it. People are looking for a non-credit class, if you will.
Well, it's also a way to travel the world without leaving your house, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this, I think, is going to be a great program.
Now, you mentioned that there are events associated with it. What are some of the events?
Well, in some cases, they are book talks. For example, there's a book called Fever by Mary Beth Keane, and that book will actually be related to a band concert that's going to be held at Central Library featuring Irish music and dance, which relates to the book, and that's going to be on July 27th at Central Library. And if you go on our website, or there's actually a little brochure that you could get that kind of feels like a course catalog for your entire summer, and it'll have each of the activities. There's another one, a book called Lost City Radio, and this is a novel by Daniel Alacone, and there's going to be a piano concert at Central related to that. This is South American folk and jazz music, and so we've combined the program with that book. Couple of book talk discussions. There's going to be a pop-up discussion and workshop at Sun King Brewery about a novel called The Lowland. And this was actually a Pulitzer Prize winning book by Yompa Lahiri. Let me pronounce that one correctly. Somebody's got to help me. She's a fascinating author, and I think a book talk at Sun King Brewery, sponsored by your public library.
What's not to love about that, right? Beer and books.
Beer and books. I like it. So it's going to be a great summer for adult reading as well as children.
Now, how do people, if they want to get involved in the summer reading program, how do they go about signing up? Are there deadlines or anything like that?
The program runs until the end of July for the children's program, and they can sign up at any of the libraries or the bookmobile stops, things like that, any of the youth centers or places that participate. For the adults who want to read, obviously, if they actually want to formally sign up and get in the program and have the fun of all of that, that's fine. I suspect that even after the children go back to school on the 4th or 5th of August, many of the adults are going to be hanging on to this syllabus and continuing to read. It looks like more than a semester's worth of work to me.
Yeah. Now, can they do it online, too? Is there a way to sign up for anything?
You can get many of the books you could download in ebook format. We have purchased, of the books that are in the recommended reading list for adults, we have purchased them in print, in ebook, and in downloadable audio wherever we could. Okay. So you really do have multiple ways to access the material.
Okay, and we probably ought to give the URL to the library's website here so that people know where to go for the information.
Sure, www.indypl.org. It's indypl.org.
That's good. I was going to ask you to do it again because people don't drive around with a pen in hand for the just to listen to the show. We are talking about the many great doings at the Indianapolis Public Library on No Limits today. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, in addition to everything else, you're in the middle of a transitional phase, too, of sorts, in that you have a new strategic plan that you're getting ready to implement, too, right?
We do.
That's supposed to take you from 2015 to 2020.
Yes, and just now we are starting the serious work on the 2015 budget, which we are able to do because we've completed work on this new plan. And, in fact, I'd like to issue an invitation, if I can, to the public to join us at Central Library on July 28th. I know that kind of looks like it's way out there, but that's just almost a year from when we started work on the plan. So a full year of conversation and deliberation about where your public library is headed. And on July 28th at 6 p.m. at Central Library, we will, in fact, celebrate the publication and rollout of the new plan. And I'm so grateful for the community engagement that we were able to pull together and the folks who really advised us about what they wanted from their public library. It's been a very rich process.
Now, what on the 28th, you're inviting people, is that more celebratory or is it?
It is.
Okay.
It is. It's very much a celebration, a culmination. You know, you can get your own personal copy of the plan with all of the goodies and pictures and thank yous to all the people who worked so hard on it. And it serves in many ways as kind of a kickoff to here it is, we've been working hard on it, and let's all go forth and do amazing things now over the next 5 years.
So, and part of it, it sounds like then, is also explanatory to tell people what the event. Yeah. So, again, it is July 28th at what time?
6 p.m. at Central Library.
Okay.
And all of the folks who worked on the 9 task forces will be there for us to say thank you to them. And the library board will officially receive the formal plan from the steering committee that was led by Hope Hampton and Carrie Likens. And we'll have a chance to say thank you to lots of folks who worked on it.
So does the library board still have to vote on this formally, or is it?
No, they did formally
accept it already.
Yes, they have formally accepted it.
Okay, so this is more like getting the embossed signature from a piece of legislation is something like that. It's nothing that,
it's that
is official.
It's that ceremonial moment when you say to everybody, thanks for how hard you worked, now let's roll.
How many people, you say there were 9 different committees working on this?
9 different task forces.
And where did you find these people?
You know, it was wonderful because we were very interested in doing this plan in hearing from what the community needed from its library. It wasn't a case of us as librarians telling the community what we thought we should do. It was really a listening process and trying to understand the needs of the community and where could the library be useful in meeting those needs. And so those task forces were on topics like formal education, informal education, business development, neighborhood development, trying to take a look at technology and innovation, different topics that really matter in this community if Indianapolis is going to be a great city. And as we looked around and invited people who were working in those different areas to join mm-hmm. us, they were very generous with their time and their opinions. And then at some of our libraries across the city, there were people who had strong feelings about these different things and stepped up.
We are talking about what's going on at the Indianapolis Public Library here on No Limits. My guest is Jackie Meadus. Please stay with us. We are going to talk a little bit after the break about what is in the strategic plan. Again, please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about all the doings at the Indianapolis Public Library, which involve changes to the summer reading program, a new strategic plan, basically bold ventures into a new era. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a call at 866-476-3881. You can reach out to us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do as this listener did and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. My guest is Jackie Meadus, who is the CEO for the library. Jackie, the question we've got is, what is in store for the Eagle Branch Library? I've heard that there will be changes to that branch, and that's part, I know, of the strategic plan. I think probably we ought to lay out what's in it, but let's answer this person's question first, what the overview of the...
Sure. The Eagle Library will experience a lot of very exciting changes in the years that are covered by this new strategic plan. One of them has to do with its physical location. Mm-hmm. Right now, it is set back on a little bit quieter street, kind of off the heavily traveled areas. And over the years, has become one of our smaller libraries. Mm. And so our hope is to relocate that facility not too far away, staying in the same general community, but looking to a location where we will be more visible mm-hmm. and where we have the opportunity to really present the community with a larger library, a library that has more amenities. Frankly, the current Eagle Library doesn't even have accessible bathrooms, and so there's things like that we have to address.
That would be a problem, yeah.
Sure, but the community on that side of town is so wonderfully diverse, and the library very heavily used, and so we know that we need to relocate it where more people will find us, where more people can use us, and where we can offer a wider array of services to meet their needs.
Could we talk a little bit about, overall, what the strategic plans, imperatives were? What it's supposed to take the library to?
And it's interesting because so many people immediately want to focus on the activities of goal number 4, where we talk about locations and access to the library. But the earlier goals, 1 through 3, are really valuable as well, and they say a lot about the flavor and the nature of library service in the next 5 years as opposed to the location of it. We know, for example, that the library really has the ability to enrich people's opportunities for personal growth and learning. And so there are a number of activities described in this plan that will allow us to do that. They give us more opportunities to support our school systems and support students' academic success. They give us a lot of opportunities to support adults who want to have their own informal, ongoing education. We expect that we'll have more opportunities for programs, adult speakers, hands-on learning, all kinds of informal growth and education opportunities for adults as well as young people. And we know that the job market's changing, and people struggle to figure out how to find themselves in a new job market. There's a lot of things the library's been able to identify that we can do to assist people, whether it be retraining or somehow or another getting yourself positioned to pursue new career directions, again, informal education often. But those are things that we've had some success with so far in our job centers and our classes. So we see a lot of demand for that in the future and a place the library can make a difference. Goal number two talks about strengthening neighborhoods and businesses in our community. And I think we all know that as much as we love our city, we live in our neighborhoods. And what can we all be doing to make them more vibrant, to have great gathering places in our neighborhoods, to have places that are seen as a source of information so you can be an informed electorate, to have a place where you can celebrate the life and culture of your neighborhood. We think our libraries can do that across the community. And there's a number of activities outlined for the next 5 years that'll move us in that direction. We hope to do more to support business development. I think the best job creation often comes from small businesses, and small businesses are often the ones who struggle to get good access to information. Mm-hmm. We can be of more assistance to them in the future, and we hope to be able to do so. And then the third goal really zeroes in on innovation. And if there's anything that's going to help grow our community, it's this need to be more innovative. We just can't be a better Indianapolis doing the same things we've been doing. We've got to do the new things. We've got to find the leading edge technologies. We've got to make sure that those of us who are a little bit older get caught up on the leading edge technologies. Those are all ways that the library can help with this. And I think if you look back over your life, many of us will remember that sometimes the first computers we used were library computers. And nowadays, there's so much that people can do with technology. We're doing demonstrations with Google Glass at the library these days. And so for people to have a chance to experience new technologies and other innovations, that can really help move our community forward. And we think the library has a real responsibility in that area.
And then the fourth area is the one that, gets most of the attention. And
it
would
is,
be remiss
it,
if we did not talk about that.
Well, it's really the one that is the easiest for people to get their arms around.
Mm-hmm.
And we're thrilled that people want to talk about this one. I'm so happy that people see a library as being a critical element to their neighborhood or to their community. And we are concerned about making sure that the most number of people, the greatest number of people, have access to libraries. And as our community has grown over the years, you know, we're no longer just serving the old city of Indianapolis. We serve all of Marion County. We are looking at relocating a few of our facilities to reach more of the population. And in the case of some others, like Brightwood or Eagle, we're looking at relocating just so we can provide a better facility than the one we currently have. So there are changes all across the county as far as facilities are concerned. In some instances, if we're not relocating a library, there are many out there, we're not going to do anything to change their address, but you will see changes inside of them that reflect those first three goals about what we are actually doing at the library.
What sorts of changes inside?
You know, sometimes it's something as simple as taking out a range of old reference books that don't need to get consulted real often and replacing it with comfortable chairs that have electrical outlets in them so you can come in and plug in and spend time reading on your own personal device, accessing the internet or downloading some electronic materials, making the library a place where you can spend time. That notion of the library as a third place has really resonated with people. And I think in our society these days, we're looking for some place that we can go besides home and work. And a lot of people have found the library to meet that need
That's
pretty well.
That's quiet and comfortable and a good place to
And meet your friends, too.
Yeah. We are talking about the doings at the Indianapolis Public Library. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you for having me on. Jackie, thank you for your leadership of the library. I'm a longtime activist in the Crooked Creek community, and about 15 years ago, we led a group filming your your meeting hall where you have your board meetings, asking for a new library. And at that time, we were promised a new library in the Crooked Creek after the expansion of the main library. We have been very patient and hopeful that this is going to happen. So I'm asking, my question is, when can we expect to see a library in our community, and the request, which is the community would like to see it north of Kessler on Michigan Road, if possible.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the call and the question, Carrie. Jackie.
Well, thank you, Carrie. We are very aware of the desire for people up there on the northwest side of the city to have more access to library service. Years ago, we created the Pike Township, the library up there by Pike High School. And as Pike Township has grown, clearly that library is no longer enough to serve that population. So this is an example of one of the very, very tough, challenging decisions the library board had to make, in that we have a limited amount of resources. We can't just be adding libraries. Mm-hmm. So we will, in fact, over the course of this five-year plan, move the library resources that are currently deployed in the lower Martin Luther King area there, south of 38th Street. Those will be moved up, and we will be providing a library north of 38th Street. Probably not as far north as 70th. I think that's a little too far. That starts to get a little too close to the current Pike line of service. But somewhere in the Kessler and Michigan Road corridor, right in through there, is where we would like to be. That way we kind of split the difference between the Flanner House and the Crooked Creek folks, both of whom feel so strongly about having a library. So we're coming.
We've also gotten an email question from a listener named Ann, and if you would like to do as Ann has done and send us an email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. She says, what initiative does the library have to provide free access to wireless internet? Since public information is provided more and more via internet access that many of us do not have or cannot afford.
That question really does come to the heart of why public libraries are still so important in our community. And we have found the growth in the use or the access of our wireless service to be phenomenal. We track this in all of our buildings. And system-wide on a given week, let's see if I can get a weekly number out of this, what I have, over 7,000 times a week, unique people are accessing the wireless service in our public libraries. They're coming in with their own mobile devices that they don't have access to the internet to at home to be able to use, and they're using them. And this is growing phenomenally.
So is that change? I mean, do you still provide computer access that is
we do.
Internet? But is that a smaller portion of the activity at the library than it used to be?
The growth has slowed in that area is what I would say. It has not particularly dropped off yet, but the growth in that one has slowed, where you come in and use our desktops or laptop computers. So that's leveling off, and now the growth is you come in with your own device and use our high-speed internet. And we have regularly upped the bandwidth, so to speak, to maintain good response time and things for people when they are coming in to get on the wireless. Because while there's a market for secondhand laptops and tablet prices are starting to come down, internet access is still expensive for people. So that is something we are providing, and the public is absolutely using it.
One of the big changes, I mean, it sounds to me like we're talking about really a revolution in the way that libraries have to function and perform. I mean, I'm thinking about just the things we have described here, that, you know, the library is now a place where you come to meet with your friends. I mean, I'm old enough that if you actually tried to talk with something in a library, you would get the evil eye from a librarian or anything like that. So that's changed. And I remember, you know, also going to the library, not sure what it was I wanted to read, but just wandering around the stacks until something caught my eye. Now, increasingly, or if I had to do a research paper or something like that in school, going there and going through the card catalogs and doing research. Now, of course, the internet provides, you know, many of those functions or serves many of those functions for that the library used to. So how has the library had to redefine itself to adapt to that new, you know, just the new way that we store and deliver information?
Sure. And that's exactly what it is. We store and deliver information differently, but if anything now, there is more information out there than ever before. And I think people are actually more overwhelmed by that, and in many instances are actually searching for some guidance through that maze of information. And not all of it is as accessible to us as we think it is. I'm amazed all the time at people who continue to come to our tinker stations because they don't know how to work all the devices that you have to use to get to all of that. So it's out there, but not everybody. I mean, our younger children seem to be born knowing how to use this stuff. I don't know what that's about, but it just is so intuitive for them. But for so many people in our community, just because it's out there electronically doesn't mean they know how to get to it or what to do with it. And so they're turning to us for some coaching on that kind of thing. And we literally become kind of information coaches for people. Not the sole guardian of the information anymore, but instead that coach who helps you develop the skills so that you can, in fact, access it.
Yeah, it seems to me historically librarians have performed, and libraries have performed several functions. You know, they were the keeper of the records, a keeper of the information. They were also sort of the gatekeepers, had some function in terms of determining what was valid information and what was not, and then a guide as to how you go find it. It sounds like it's less of that first one, the keeper of the records, and much more those two other functions have really stepped up. Is that?
I think that's a good analogy, yes.
And, you know, does that mean then that that you have to have different people or different, has there been retraining that has to take place for librarians so that that they can step into these new roles?
Oh, it's crucial for us, as a matter of fact. John, when we look at our budget for the next year, couple of years, we have actually increased our investment in staff training. And we're really working on staff skills assessment and things to make sure that our own team is fully prepared to fulfill those new roles. And if you think about it, if the, you know, if a 40% of our staff is over the age of 50, that might suggest that not all of them are totally and completely comfortable with all these new methods of accessing information. So staff training is really critical to us. And as those roles change, for some in the library community, that's been a struggle. They have this sense that we were somehow or another the guardians of the best of the best. And if that's not who we are anymore, then, you know, where is our value? Well, there's still all kinds of wonderful work for us to do. It's just different.
I can see why it would be disconcerting for them, though. I mean, in part because, you know, people go into that sort of work because they believe that preserving information, preserving the wisdom of the past, as it were, that's why we write it down so it can be transferred forward, is an important function, and to realize that that is a lesser part of their job than it might have been before, I would think would be a little discombobulating.
I think it's hard for people, but I think the important thing to recognize is that it is not that it's not part of our job. It's just that so many other parts have been added to our job that the amount of our role that is consumed by making sure that all those wonderful pieces of literature are still on the shelf, that is less the issue now. We can get those for you if you want them. We can get them for you. We have all kinds of ways to get them for you. But now we've also got to be doing all these other things. We have some wonderful programs we do with young children where we teach them about illustrating children's picture books and things by using software packages on a laptop about Illustrator and things like that, or Paintbox, different things like that. And the absolute magic of being able to talk about really famous children's picture books that we all love and relate that to the new technology with the children of doing illustrations and stuff like that. It's combining the old with the new. And it's really quite joyful.
We are talking about the doings at the Indianapolis Public Library with Jackie Mutis, the CEO of the library. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about all of the activity at the Indianapolis Public Library. My guest is Jackie Nedis, who's the CEO of the library. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we were talking about the strategic plan and how really it's about repositioning the library, you know, to hold on to some parts of its traditional role, but also move into new areas, obviously, and to try to either close or shift some of the branches so that they better serve the community. And track population shifts and changes. There also is, as part of that strategic plan, is an effort to digitize a lot of the library's holdings. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, this is a wonderful direction for us, and it's an interesting one that does, in fact, harken back to what we were just speaking about the library's traditional role to keep the record, if you will. One of the things we've come to realize is that so often the record of our community is not easily accessible to people. And the wonders of new technology are such that if we do, in fact, digitize and index the wonderful treasures that are buried in all kinds of file cabinets and all kinds of organizations across the city, we can put those up electronically and share them with the world, who will then have a far richer sense of our great city than they might have had if somebody doesn't do that. So, with the help of a seed grant from Lilly Endowment, we've been able to start researching this, and we had done a number of small projects over the past couple of years, high school yearbooks, the historic firefighters collection, some things like that. We've clearly seen the value of that work, and we are now prepared to launch a full-fledged effort at community digitization. And we'll be working with arts groups and neighborhood organizations, civic organizations across the community to help them organize their historic record, get it digitized and indexed, and get it up on the World Wide Web, if you will, through our library, literally contributing those things to the Digital Public Library of America in the long run. And it's going to be so amazing that someone who wants to research something about the history of the children's choir or the Indianapolis Opera or our own fire department might be able to do so, whether they're in Atlanta or Portland. It won't matter.
What sorts of things are you going to digitize? I mean, I'm assuming there's got to be some selection process.
Well, there is. And
you know, my grocery list from 1985 probably won't make the cut.
I don't know. It depends how famous you end up being. And someone might want that list. They might want to know, what did you eat that made you so good? You know, we're
not
really
likely, but
it is difficult to know where to start. I mean, you could take the Encyclopedia of Indianapolis and realize that there's, what, 9,000 organizations you could look at. And we can't do that initially, but we kind of have an eye to the bicentennial coming up and thinking about what are the various groups and organizations that have helped make our city strong and have made our city so rich culturally. And so our work, I think, on the high school yearbooks has been really delightful. It's given people a sense of identity. It's allowed them to reminisce a little bit. It's been helpful to the genealogists. So those kinds of things are very obviously some of the first ones you want to do. They've got a lot of bang for the buck right off the bat. But now we're starting to look at different segments of history, and we're doing this in conjunction with partners like IUPUI, because the library at IUPUI has done phenomenally great work in this area already, and we hope to continue to partner with them. They're doing some work out at the Speedway. We're looking at arts organizations, for example. When you think about the fact that the Children's Choir, the Symphonic Choir, Dance Kaleidoscope, Heartland Film Festival, these organizations are such a wonderful part of our city's history now. And so those are the kinds of groups that we hope to get their materials digitized and make them accessible to people.
We've gotten an email question from a listener, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, what sort of special services does the library offer for job seekers?
This is an important area for us in the last few years, not only because of the challenges of the recession that we had, but also because of the changing patterns of the job market. We used to walk into a place and hand them a resume or ask to have an appointment with the HR person, and you could do that face-to-face. Nobody takes a job application that way anymore now. And so at probably 9 or 10 of our libraries, we actually have what we call the Job Center. And this is a setup of laptop computers with some staff on hand who are trained to assist people in creating a resume, actually finding the sites where different jobs are posted, helping someone to literally frame a letter of application or to fill out an online application. Mm-hmm. So many employers expect you to go through the first 3 or 4 steps online before you're ever going to get face-to-face with anybody. And we can do that with people in the libraries. There's, of course, things like our testing guides. I know if you're trying to study to take the CLD or something like that, the commercial driver's license test, there are both books you can read and practice tests you can do at the library on computers so that you can get yourself prepped for these careers. Some of them might be careers you've never looked at before, and so you don't even know where to start. And for some people, maybe taking a paid class somewhere is a little bit out of the question if you're unemployed or underemployed. And so things like these preparation guides can be a real asset for people. So I think the job centers and then the general resources in the collection, both of those will go a long way to help job seekers.
We are talking about the doings at the Indianapolis Public Library today on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. This is a lot of change, and I guess what I'm wondering is one of the functions of not just the Indianapolis Public Library, but all libraries had been a little bit of attempting to be everything to everybody. It sounds like to some degree that's going to have to change. I mean, you're not looking at having exponentially expanding resources for in the future. I mean, how much of this is now a process of selecting the things that the library, the services that the library is going to be very good at delivering?
It is a challenge for us. We live in a world of property tax caps, for example, here in Indiana. And while in some states, Ohio, for example, and a number of others, they are making increasingly greater investments in their public library, that's not happening here right now. Fortunately, with our many sponsors and donors through our foundation, we are able to provide more services than we did in past years. But we're making choices, absolutely making choices. You know, we can't have a branch in every single neighborhood that people would like. But we're also trying hard to fine-tune what we're doing and work smarter, using more technology and working with partners so that we can address more needs. The strategic plan we're coming off of was very heavily focused on early childhood work. Mm-hmm. That was about all we thought we could really focus on in this last plan because resources were especially challenged. Now we have heard loud and strong from the community that we don't get to just work on the early childhood stuff. There are too many other needs, and we've got to figure out how we can be helpful on them. I think through partnerships, we will do more than the resources might initially make you think is possible. We have some great partnerships going with United Way, with many of our school systems, starting to talk to other partners in town like Sokoa, so that we can, and Oasis, working with the seniors, things like that. So we're going to have a broader array of services than we did for a while, but we are definitely going to have to be working smart because it isn't just done with more resources.
Is, you know, the fact that, well, first, I guess I want to take us back to the summer reading program at some point, but I think before we leave the strategic plan, is it, at the end, you know, for this to be successful, for you to get where you want to be by 2020, by end of 2020, you know, what will the libraries look like at the end of that process 6 years from now?
Sure. Great question, because you can't have a plan like this without some sort of measures of success. And it is our belief that if we do this work well, people's lives will be more successful, that more people will be succeeding in school. People will have had a chance to improve their own personal knowledge levels, or perhaps even their job opportunities. Neighborhoods will be a little bit more connected because of what their public library has allowed them to do, or what we have facilitated for them. I think that other organizations in town can be stronger because of our partnership. Mm-hmm. And whether that's a neighborhood association, or whether that's some small businesses in a particular community, whether the teens in our community have a little bit more to do with their time than they do right now, those kinds of measures are all on our mind. Mm-hmm. And as this plan rolls out, we will be tracking pretty diligently these various measures of success. We've got to, because resources are limited, and you've got to be responsible about them.
And in terms of the changes, when you said that, you know, you got back feedback saying that you can't just focus on early childhood. I mean, one of the things, obviously, the summer reading program, you've expanded it to adults. You're also trying to expand it clearly across cultural lines.
Yes.
And, you know, could you talk a little bit about that process, about what went into that?
Well, we have started some work in the last couple of years through an initiative that our immigrant outreach specialist has developed. Jessica Moore is on our staff, and we brought her on board recognizing how diverse the Indianapolis community is becoming. Between our immigrants, between the folks who are coming to town to work for some of our larger businesses, our population is different than it was in the 50s. And it's not just a question of black and white. It's a lot of different nationalities and ethnic groups. And so that has caused us to do programming that appeals to different populations. It's caused us to diversify our collection more. We now have thousands of materials in foreign languages. And this year, we've really pushed it hard with the summer reading program. It's called Read in Any Language.
Mm-hmm.
And while our work with the sister city committees has allowed us to focus kind of one city or one country at a time, we're recognizing this summer that if you look at any one of our school districts, they will tell you that they have over 100 languages spoken mm-hmm. in an individual school district. And you hear that and you just shake your head. You can't imagine it. But it's true. Indianapolis is really starting to diversify, to welcome new populations. In fact, I think our only real growth has come from immigrant populations, not so much from our native population, if you will. So through this program, we're really trying to stress to those families, those children, that whatever your language is, that's great. You be reading in that language. We encounter often that families don't celebrate their native language. We have this thing here in the United States where, you know, you've got to be English.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they see that often as the assimilation process,
right,
but it's still
right.
But the country is changing, and the assimilation has to go both ways.
It does, and what a rich and wonderful thing to celebrate if you can have it going in both ways. And so that's part of what we're really trying to stress here: valuing the people who they are, where they are, valuing what they bring to us here in our city, celebrating what they bring to us in our city. But at the end of the day, reinforcing the message to every parent out there, please read with your family. That is the tool that will help your children succeed. And whatever language it is you're reading in, good for you. But we want to enforce, or we want to encourage, rather, that focus on families and children reading and developing that skill and the joy that comes with it.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, but I'd like to ask, does the, you know, if you are trying to reach out to people who read and speak in 100 different languages now, I mean, one of the challenges in the previous area of libraries was just the space challenge. You always wanted to have books in 100 different languages, but you know, there are only so many you could put into the building, so tight you could make the stacks. Does the fact that so much of this is going to be in digital form, where physical space is not as much of a consideration, is that going to make the process easier or more difficult?
I think it makes it easier for us. It used to be we'd have to decide how many copies of a book do we buy in a foreign language and which branch do we put them in. Mm-hmm. Well, now, if we're buying something in an electronic title, an electronic version, it doesn't matter where you are in the city, you can access it. And so suddenly we have much more flexibility, much, much more able to respond to people wherever they are. It also allows our collection to grow without placing as many demands on the physical space within the branch. And that's one of the wonderful things that is also stressful for our more traditional library users, mm-hmm. who struggle, I think, to make those transitions themselves.
So. Are you taking? Are you involved in the summer reading? Are you reading the list yourself? Or
Well, as a matter of fact, I do have one book from the list on my bedside table. I am, in fact, because I was a big fan of The Kite Runner and this Splendid Sun, and so. On my desk right now that I am reading, because my husband just finished it, is the Khalid Hosseini and the Mountains Echoed. That's what I'm working on now.
And if people want to get involved, the adults, and get a look at the list, could you give folks the URL one more time where
sure.
they can go get the information?
Right. It's www.indypl.org. So that's INDYPL.org.
And that's where they'll be able to find not just the list, but also the events that are associated with the list.
Absolutely. And they can, as of this week, they'll be able to pick up a little booklet at any of their branch libraries or central library that will literally feel like a curriculum for the whole summer for adults.
Well, Jackie Needus, I'd like to thank you. This has been a really fun conversation. Congratulations on all the great work at the Indianapolis Public Library. Hope you'll come back.
Well, John, we're happy to be here, and thanks so much for a chance to tell this story.
You have been listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.